It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff and Gina join Kevin Marks on the 7th anniversary of Micro Formats. We'll find out what the heck that is. We'll also have a preview of Google I.O. and a review of the announcements from Microsoft. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by Cachefly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 152, recorded June 20th, 2012. Now with green stamps. This Week in Google is brought to you by Stamps.com. Use Stamps.com to buy and print real U.S. postage the instant you need it, right from your desk. For our special offer, go to Stamps.com, click the radio microphone, and enter Twig. And by Go to My PC. Go to My PC from Citrix connects you directly to your office Mac or PC from any other computer or your iPad or iPhone. Sign up for a 30-day free trial today at GoToMyPC.com. Use the promo code Twig. And by Carbonite Online Backup. Automatic, continuous, and unlimited backup for your computer files, just $59 a year. Try it free at Carbonite.com. Use the offer code Twig to get 2 bonus months with purchase. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show that covers anything we damn well want to cover. How about that? I've got attitude now. Mostly because I got the smartest people in the world on this show. And if they want to talk about, I don't know, Microsoft Surface, or if they want to talk about Samsung Tektile, I don't care. Whatever you want to talk about. Nominally, it's about Google, the cloud, Facebook, that kind of thing. We're going to start with Gina Trapani, founding editor of Life Hacker. She now has her own blog at smarterware.org and works for Expert Labs, where she develops ThinkUp, which is an app that synthesizes social media information into your big data now, baby. You're in the big data realm.
Oh, yeah. I just dropped a 10 million row table this morning and then realized my backups were bad. So, yeah.
Oh!
Hurt. It hurt.
How? I don't
know. Luckily, my app can recapture the data. But, yeah, it was one of those things. Check your backups. PSA.
Holy moly. I'm sorry to hear that. I'm surprised you're not bawling your eyes out. I would be.
It was one of those mornings. It was it's not a critical table. It could have been a worse table. It was a secondary.
If you didn't really need it, 10 million rows, just think of it as cost cutting.
You know, it's just, I'm trying to be real zen about it. Nothing is really ours. Yeah. It's ephemeral, you know.
That's right. You're right sizing. In 100 years, no one will know.
Yeah.
Also here, Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com, the author of Public Parts. He's back home finally. You've been traveling everywhere in the world.
Subjecting you to bad bandwidth the world around.
Well, now it's, now we've got a new band, bad bandwidth king. So Jeff joined us via all sorts of strange devices from all around the world. Now it's Kevin Marks' turn. Kevin Marks, who is at Sales. You're at Salesforce, right?
Yes.
And, of course, hosts the great TunnelVision at TunnelVision.tv. He's outside Salesforce today at the beautiful Ferry Plaza in San Francisco via 4G. Look at that. It's gorgeous. Don't move the camera too much, Kevin.
Picture with them break up. I think the problem is this is Verizon 4G used to be really good. Then everyone got iPads that
right.
Connect to it.
Everything's good when no one uses it, Kevin.
Right. There's probably too many iPads in this building.
The dirty little secret of bandwidth. As long as no one's using it, it's great. So I got to start because there really is a lot to talk about. Today, Microsoft had 2 big announcements this week. Google I.O. is next week. And a week ago, Apple had WWDC. This is like the season of announcements, and it's really fascinating stuff. I almost don't know what to make of it. That's why I've got the big brains here. But let's start. This is kind of a funny little video that was created by, was it Rewrite Web?
Rewrite
the site
web.
That
it's
I can
really
never,
hard to say.
I can never pronounce Rewrite Web.
Consonants.
Please.
So, Leo, I was in a restaurant in Boston the other night, and a Mexican restaurant, and I had a margarita, which I rarely do. And so I know this is the power of Leo Laporte, as I was about to leave, another drink arrived with a note saying, we like your work. So it's your... The hangover the next morning was your fault.
No, don't blame me. They didn't mention me by name.
This is why I do Twig. It's the free drinks.
Do not blame me.
Whoever you are out there, I couldn't read the handwriting. So whoever you are, thank you, I think.
I think they could be a fan of your, maybe they were former students. They could be a fan of your Buzz Machine. They could be a fan of the public parts or what would Google do. You got a lot of work. I'm not responsible for you.
After that moment, everything I said sounded like Re-Way-Web.
We-Way-Web. Yeah, don't say that drunk. All right, here we go. This is from Read Write Web, a mashup, ladies and gentlemen.
I certainly want to thank everybody
for coming today.
We've reimagined, redefining the reimagination.
Reimagined for reimagining the tablet.
This is the new Microsoft Surface.
We call it the iPad. That's what it looks like. Surface is super thin. The iPad is really thin. It's 10.6 inch, 9.7 inch, optically bonded IPS display at under 1.5 pounds. Just 1.5 pounds. Dual 2x2 MIMO antennas. The latest in wireless networking. It's got a 30-pin connector. Full-size USB port. The keyboard dock. The full multi-touch keyboard. Browsing the web. I can browse smoothly. And I'm just going to go to Safari.
Oops.
Oh, yeah, by the way, Stephen had a little trouble. He crashed it. He had to bring that one back to the table and get a new
screen.
One. Oops.
Excuse me just a second.
Hey, sorry. You never saw Jobs do this. Let me. He does look
Surface
like.
Surface works great for entertainment as well. Video. Music. Games. Gaming. Lay back and watch a movie. A great way to watch movies. And that's really what entertainment should be about. It feels natural in your hands. It's phenomenal to hold the internet in your hand.
It actually sits perfectly comfortable in your hands. It
feels great in your hand. It's really great.
Great. This is a great choice for you.
It's so much more intimate.
It just fits there.
Tremendous breath.
Click.
Magical.
Click.
Revolutionary.
One of a kind.
We had a very aggressive price goal. $499.
And we'll have a retail price comparable with competitive Ultrabook class PCs.
Unbelievable.
We believe that any intersection between human and machine.
The intersection of technology and liberal arts.
And you know, we're just getting started.
And we hope you love the iPad as much as we do. You'll never want to go back.
That's the complete Surface family.
Interesting. Now, that I don't think they were intending that to be a Read Write Web was intending that to be humorous, but they were comparing. This was the original iPad launch in 2010, 28 months ago, with the launch of the Surface, which is still not available. And it's unclear when it'll be available, but probably sometime around Windows 8, which is, they said when Windows 8 goes RTM. Which
and it's going to be available only in their like three stores, right?
Well, I'm sure you'll be able to get it. You won't be able to get it from Dell or Lenovo.
There's a Microsoft store in my mall around here, Bridgewater, and it's sad. Do you remember the Seinfeld episode, Bizarro episode?
Yes, it is Bizarro Apple Store.
It's Bizarro Apple. Yeah, it's so weird.
But I don't want to be an Apple, the traditional Apple bigot, and say, oh, we were there first, we did it first. Oh, but look, they've got a magnet. Isn't that clever?
That keyboard looks really cool, though.
I think there's stuff to say. It's an interesting take on a laptop, right?
Yes, it is. Yes, it
is. It's not a laptop because you can't put it on your lap.
Oh, you're a good point. It isn't actually
a
laptop.
That's a good point.
It's all floppy. So it has to...
Yeah, the keyboard is a touch keyboard. There are two keyboards. There's one that's... It's noon in San Francisco.
Whereas
1:30 p.m.
But it's very much like that, which is an iPad with the Logitech Ultra Thin. That's a cover. It becomes a stand. And I think that one thing Microsoft learned is, look, people do want keyboards on their tablets. They're also, though, and the reason I say it's a laptop is there's really two of these surfaces. There's a Windows RT ARM-based one, which is essentially a real tablet, much like the iPad, and only runs Metro applications, does not run Windows applications per se. And then there's they call it a Windows 8 Pro Surface, which is running Windows 8, the actual operating system, and will run Windows apps. And that's a very big difference. One is going to cost more like a laptop. That's the one that's comparable to an Ultrabook. One is comparable, supposedly. Competitive is
so
what they said.
Lower-end will not run native apps.
Not native Windows apps. No, so one of the things Microsoft has said about Windows RT is you will have to be a Metro app. Now, as a developer, you can write a Metro app for Windows and have press a button and say that's also going to be available on the tablet. But as it stands right now, this is another tablet with no apps.
Okay, right. So it was, before I knew that, I thought the only reason for me to look lustily at the Surface was if I could run store and then share through Dropbox real Microsoft Word documents.
Yes, you probably can, because it will ship with not a full version, but a trial version of Office for
both
Windows RT.
Both versions of the tablet.
Yes. Oh.
Okay.
That's
what I'm asking.
I think so.
Do you think that the integration with the Microsoft sort of ecosystem alone, just the Office apps and SharePoint and SkyDrive, like just that alone will be compelling enough for people to buy it? I mean, I know some people who work at huge organizations and live with Office and do all their work through Office. And having a tablet that instantly connects to Exchange and has all the sort of rich features that the Microsoft suite offers would be good enough alone.
That's always been how Microsoft sold non-PCs. That's how they sold Windows Phone. It's still how they sell Windows Phone. And it's not compelling enough for Windows Phone to be even close to competitive with Android and iPhone.
Right.
But it is it's their lock-in. You know, Apple has a lock-in, too. Let's not ignore it. But their lock-in in business works in a Windows environment.
And so Microsoft is not motivated to finally make Word operate on the iPad. But now Apple is oddly motivated to make Word documents smoother.
And Google, too. Remember, Google bought QuickOffice.
Right.
So the Google Docs can work with... Yeah, and Microsoft has that weird problem where it's like on one side Enterprise and on the other side Xbox, you know, and they're wildly successful on both ends. They're so different, but then all the stuff in the middle kind of isn't there yet.
Well, the real challenge for Windows 8 in general is going to be business. I think business is going to stay with Windows 7. And I think that is underlying why Microsoft can do this, because, you know, one of the challenges of this is if Microsoft, this is a huge change in Microsoft's business model. They've never made PCs. They've always licensed an operating system to PC makers. The only hardware they made was Xbox and, you know, mice and keyboards, but Xbox.
So now they're competing
They're competing with the channel. And now there's two reasons they can do that, I think. One is that they recognize business is going to stay with Windows 7. So the channel will continue, you know, Lenovo and Dell and everybody else will continue to say, I think Windows 7 is going to last a lot longer than, let's say, XP or
Vista.
That's
really weird. Because if you're Michael Dell, don't you say, okay, you just left me in the past.
But what is Michael Dell going to do? What can Michael Dell do? Where does he go?
Well, he hopes that his operating system doesn't compete with him.
He has to. Is he going to become a Linux house?
Yeah, like
what's he going to do? And that's the other part of that. There's two pieces, and that's the second piece is Microsoft's basically saying, what are you going to do?
Well, he could become a Chrome house.
No, a Chrome house, Chrome OS.
Yes.
Maybe.
Dell could sell servers. Dell could go, you know, maybe high-end. Lenovo? What does Lenovo do? What does Acer do? What do all these companies that are living in the Microsoft ecosystem do? They can't give up. They have to continue to sell Windows, right? And there's those who say, and I think this might also be true, that one of the guys who said this was the CEO, was it of Acer or Asus? I think it was the CEO of Asus said, oh, don't worry. We're not worried. As soon as we start shipping our tablets, Microsoft will step back. This is just to kind of prime the pump. I thought that was interesting.
That is. Do we wish that Google will do this?
Being cagey about the price, because they want to set a high price.
I'll interpret, Kevin. He said maybe this is why they're being cagey about the price, because they don't want is because they don't want to hurt the channel, Kevin.
Right. It may be that they're saying we're doing the example they compete for the low end.
It's almost a reference platform, and they had some success. They've had some success with Windows Phone by being very specific about what the hardware should be. There isn't any variety among Windows phones. The new
very impressive, Leo, that you speak 4G.
I'm learning. It started with you. You gave me my first training. So, but Gina, Ray, you raise a very interesting point. Next week, we're going to see Google, and some of the rumors are that Google will do the same thing. We'll say, we're going to make an Android tablet because none of you seem to have a clue about what to do.
And then
I am dying
Android.
For Google to do this. I want Google to do this. I want Google to issue the ultimate best reference Nexus tablet that's like acts as sort of instructive to the rest of the manufacturers. This is what the tablet experience should be like.
And they've already done that with Android phones with Nexus.
Right.
Yes.
Right. So I want a Nexus tablet. That's what I'm hoping for.
I bet you. I would be willing to bet five to one. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah, you think we're going to get one?
Yeah, you are because I'm going to be here anchoring.
Stop grinning, Gina.
Jeff and I, are you going to be able to join us for our Google I/O keynote conference?
I won't know until I get the schedule.
Well, Kevin, I'm sure you will. And so we'll do breaking news.
Ticket, if you can give me Jeff's ticket, I'll go.
Oh, yeah, we're going to send you there, actually. We're going to try to – we have to talk to Google and see if we can do a
– You have to grow a beard and go to Google.
Right. I took about Gutenberg.
Yes.
Just Gutenberg and Habermas it all the way. You'll be safe. But Gina will be there, and then we'll do what we'd normally do. And in this case, Google makes it easy because they provide a stream of the keynote. Last year, there were two keynotes, two successive days, with lots of information in both. I'm not sure how we'll handle that, if they're going to do that. But they haven't said, have they, Gina? We don't even really know what's going to happen at Google I.O.
We don't. Well, the session schedule for developers is up on the site. But those sessions start at 11:45 on both Wednesday and Thursday. So, and there's nothing in the time slot from 9 or 10 to 11:45. So I think we will presume that there'll be a day one keynote and a day two keynote from 9 or 10 till 11:45.
What do you think we're going to see at Google I.O.? A reference tablet? That would be interesting. Because Android tablets are just stalled. They have not... the only one we know is a success is the Kindle Fire, which in no way mentions Android or Google.
Right. Yeah, the reference tablet, I mean, I'm hoping to see, if they don't hand out the glasses, I would like to at least see a demo or an announcement about glasses, about Project Glass during the keynotes.
I'm sure that they will. They've been wearing them everywhere. I mean, sure.
They have been. So Glass tablet and Google TV, I think we're gonna hear about as well. I bet they're going to release announce a new Google TV set-top box.
Lots of rumors about that.
Yep.
And they
anything else we're hoping for? I mean, as a developer, I'm hoping that they're going to announce that Google Plus has a real API read-write with, you know, a lot more methods that are currently available.
I think it's almost too late.
Oh, really? Interesting. Do you think it's too late for Google Plus in general, or do you think that it's too late for Google Plus to hook developers?
As far as I can tell, the only reason Google Plus is even still around is because you just get it automatically.
Yeah.
And they're insistent about it.
Flipboard has announced that they're going to put Google Plus in Flipboard.
Woo! Yeah, I'm just not overwhelmed by that.
Flipboard right now is driven by Twitter. So basically what happens with Flipboard is it turns your Twitter stream, all the links in your Twitter stream or others' Twitter streams or whatever, into a magazine. And it's a beautiful way to do it. It's actually brilliant. And, you know, it will work well with Google Plus, especially if you follow photographers. There'll be a great, you know, a lot of photographers use it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know. I'll be honest. I forget about Google Plus a lot, but when I do go there, I see a lot of content, mostly from people in our tribe. So mostly from journalists and tech writers and developers.
Well, that's
so,
who you followed, though.
That's who I follow, and that's who follows me. And you know, and I get that it hasn't penetrated beyond that community as much. Although photographers are taking advantage of it and stuff, but I don't know. It's hard to hear people say that, you know, it's dead or no one's putting content there when I see, you know.
Oh, no, there's a lot of content. Although every time I look at it, I go, who are these people? I circled these people. Who are they? But it's good content. I just think it's a much smaller group than anybody wants to acknowledge.
Right.
It's starting to feel more and more like Buzz. I hate to say it. It's busier than Buzz. And it's beautiful. I mean, I love the G+ app.
Yeah, the G+ mobile app is really nice.
I mean, it's just gorgeous.
All right, so you're in charge of Google Plus. What the hell do you do?
I think what you have to say is really telling is that Google has had three shots at social networks. One that predates Facebook or Kut. Another, Buzz, that was just an abomination. It was born stillborn partly because of the privacy, whether spurious or not, the privacy concerns with its launch. and a third now that they have thrown the entire might of Google behind. I mean, in a way, you know, many companies never do behind a single product. They've made so your bonuses are based on the word social at Google this year. And despite all of that, they don't have the traction Facebook has out of the box nowhere. Do you disagree, Kevin?
They don't have the traction Facebook has. I think that they are playing a longer game and they're trying to fit a lot of things together. And what we see as G+ is one aspect of this. And I suspect a chunk of what we see at I.O. is this idea of integrating these pieces together across much more of Google and that making more sense so that it shows up in other parts where at the moment they've got little bits around the edges, but they haven't integrated many products. I suspect we'll see a tighter integration with Android. We'll see some better integration with Docs and with YouTube and with the other major properties, and that will be part of what they do. And if they launch an API for this. They've been sort of hedging on that for far too long, and big talking about pollution and so on. But they've said they're going to bet. They're going to bet their strategy on integrating this stuff across the company and joining different products up. So I expect we'll see some of that at I/O next week.
The more that they do that, though, the more it feels forced to me. But now,
the thing is, like, Google's had so many products for so long that weren't focused on community, but that communities had built up around them, right? So, like, YouTube,
yes.
So, you connect with your friends, Reader, Logger, Gmail. A lot of big, not search, right? But most of their flagship products had some sort of social element. They were all just disconnected. So maybe Google Plus is just about connecting those. I mean, that's what we saw with the privacy policy consolidation. That's what we see with the Plus mechanism sort of propagating throughout these other products. It's true that they've failed with every product that they've tried to make solely about social. Here's Google's social product. But every single one of Google's products has some element of social to it, except for search.
That's a good,
until
that's
search
a good
plus
point.
Your world.
They have. I mean, YouTube is a really good example of a big social network.
Thriving, crazy community going on YouTube.
But you have a huge risk, too, because if you start, and I think they feel this way because they've been very slow to integrate YouTube into Google Plus. And in fact, you don't see a Google Plus, you don't see the plus bar on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's some real nervousness in both directions. One, I'm bringing all those YouTubers who are somewhat less mature, perhaps, into Google Plus. And then there's this thing that you could kill YouTube, the vibrant YouTube community. It's like mixing a saltwater and a freshwater aquarium.
It's true.
Yes. Well, the challenge YouTube has always had is that it hasn't had good tools for growing community on it. So it ends up being like the world's worst chat room. And they've been getting gradually better at that, but it's still not great. And that's the piece they need to fix, because the YouTube community is very messy. Now, the bridge they've got there is Hangouts, and the Hangouts have fairly good moderation controls. You can create the live streams and then pipe this to YouTube later. So they do have some a gateway going that way. And you can share YouTube videos on Plus, but you're right. There still feels a bit arm's length.
Yeah, I'm going to go the other way. I'm actually using Facebook less and less and less and less.
Why?
And I end up – because I just don't find conversations there. It's repetitive to Twitter, which I used to do too. So I see the same people who I'm interested in here. I'm interested in there. It kind of gives me just a small smattering of what's going on, I think. It seems a little slow. Whereas Google Plus, maybe it's just because it's the home of geeks, but I see more there.
Well, and I do think that's, that's always the issue with the social network. As soon as it's up to the public, people like us go, oh, I wouldn't. I don't. Nobody goes there anymore. And one of the reasons people like us like Google Plus is because it is geeks. It's Google engineers, pretty much for the most part. And so the quality level is, I'll grant you, very high at Google Plus. But I don't think it's a real social network. I mean, I think Twitter is showing some really kind of surprising legs in this.
There was an interesting presentation from LaWeb this morning, California time, late afternoon, London time, from Josh Ellman talking about how they changed the onboarding process at Twitter to encourage you to follow people. And that, I've complained about it. You have to say no to Lady Gaga four times before you can type anything in Twitter anymore, but that's by design. They want you to follow 20 public figures and 10 friends. If you do that, you're likely to stay on Twitter. So they built the whole onboarding process to do that.
Wow.
Which means it's changed from being a group discussion network, which is how we all started it. You know, we all joined in when it was like texting, but to your friends, because it was all done over text. And it is now this information network where, you know, the bulk of your traffic is coming from people who aren't following you for the most users.
So that, it's becoming more of a broadcast medium.
But it does still have the ability to have two-way conversations that don't get polluted, which was always the problem with, you know, any kind of public commenting system. If they still have that ability for two famous people to have a conversation on it without all the at replies drowning everyone else. So that piece, they've still gotten that, still works. And they just announced something this week where by default they will hide any posts from a verified account that start with @. So when you go to the account, you don't see all the fan shout-outs. You just see the thing that was public anyway. So they're converging more towards, you know, that worldview where there are, you know, special people and normal people.
Thank you for explaining that, because I read this blog post yesterday, and I didn't understand what they were talking about. When you visit a Twitter user's profile, you may want to see his or her original tweets rather than their conversations. Then again, you may enjoy seeing the back and forth exchanges they have with other Twitter users. Now you can have it both ways. When you visit the profiles of verified accounts, as you said, Kevin, like NASCAR or Pepsi, by default, you won't see any at replies. So that's me, by the way. So,
well, that's interesting.
If you follow me now on Twitter, you know, and by the way, most of the content I put on Twitter is now at replies, because what I'll do, and I did this a couple of days ago, is I pose a question and then have a bunch of conversations around that. You would only see the posed question. You wouldn't see anything else unless you say, I want to see everything.
But becoming getting to be a verified account is not an open, you can't apply to do that. It's not open to the public, right? You have to purchase Twitter ads or something.
They just did it for, maybe because I was grandfathered in or something.
Yeah, they had an open program early on, and then they closed that, and now you have to know somebody, and you know, it's done through agents, basically.
So here, if you look at Leo Laporte on Twitter, I don't know why you would, there's two links now here, all or no replies. And the default, which means that's what most people will see if they're not, you know, regular Twitter user, has no replies. It's just my tweets without my conversation. And it took out, by doing so, it took out, I don't know, tons of posts. because a lot of what I say on Twitter is at replies. Now, I've had people complain about that, and maybe this is what the response is. People bitch because I'm at replying publicly. They say, you know, if you don't start it with a word, but you start it with the at reply, we won't have to see that crap. But I said, I know how to use Twitter. I'm doing that because I think my response is of a more general interest.
Yeah, you put the dot when you want everyone to see it.
I try to do it a little more elegantly. Like, I'm responding to Om Malik, who's saying something about how Twitter for the Mac is crap. And he's saying, and I say, ha, Om. Instead of just saying Om, I say, ha, Om. I kind of like the elegant inference of Twitter for the Mac, though. And I make a point when I do that of putting context so that you can read that and it's not just yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, but sometimes it's not a reply. Sometimes I'm asking somebody a question or something like that. And so
that's gone.
I do put the dot.
But it doesn't matter. If you
doesn't matter?
If you're verified, you're not, so you don't have to worry about it. But if you're verified, dot doesn't make any difference.
I'm confused.
If it has an ad in it, let me look.
If it has an ad in it at all.
Yes. It's all the stuff with ads is gone. In my case, it took all of this stuff out. Like where I said, ha, at Om, gone.
Wow.
Because you clicked on reply.
Whoa. Okay. All right. Here's part of the reason for that is, right, it becomes a PR mechanism. It's just the messages you want to send out.
Well, here's an interesting one. So I backed I hope this doesn't get funded on Kickstarter. A couple of people want to do a folk album on the moon, and they're trying to raise $21 million. And I pledged $1,000 because I thought they'll never make it. So Kickstarter tweets it. Yeah, I could be in trouble, right? You know what? If they can raise $21 million, then I'll be glad to give them $1,000. So it tweets that, and it did put @Kickstarter in that tweet. So you're right, Gina. It's probably because I've been pressing reply. but I don't know.
When you press reply, there's a field that gets attached to your tweet in reply to post ID, and that's how Twitter recognizes and API developers recognizes that it is a reply. So if you click reply and then even edit the tweet so that it doesn't start with the username, it still looks like a reply, and that's why it
still has that metadata.
So this is good. So this is a little workaround. You could just edit it without the reply thing.
Right. Like, don't click reply. Just start a new tweet and say ha at om. You guys seen Branch? Speaking of curated conversations with the special people and
let's take a break and we'll talk about that.
I want to ask about something else about Twitter when we come back, though,
and we will ask about Twitter.
The NASCAR page.
And NASCAR. Now, this is a huge, by the way, little blog post of Twitter, kind of some coverage. No, this is a massive change in Twitter. And I think there's a lot. People will notice if Twitter looks very different all of a sudden if you follow a lot of authorized accounts. Including me.
I think it's becoming more of an advertising medium.
It's become a broadcast medium.
But first you need to do your ads.
But first, a word from Stamps.com. Speaking of broadcast mediums, I got to pay the bills here. And the way we pay the bills is with our fine sponsors. And we pick them very carefully. We hand select our sponsors because we want to make sure that we are talking about a product that you are A, going to be interested in, and B, that we have used and like. We don't do advertisements for anything that we don't use and like. And Stamps.com is a really good example. I've been using Stamps.com for years, long before we did the ads for them, because it's so cool. It lets you print U.S. postage from your computer. You don't go to the post office anymore. The post office comes to you. Stamps.com lets you print postage the minute you need it. It's always the right postage because you use those USB scales they give you, and I'll tell you how you can get that scale. Plug it in the computer. Plop the letter on there. It'll even print it on the envelope, which is looks very nice. Better than a postal meter mark. In fact, you don't need a postage meter. You don't need special inks or anything. You're just printing with your printer right on the envelope. Or if for a package, you can even buy sticky labels that it'll print onto if you want, like traditional stamps. And it's all through stamps.com. We've got a special trial for you. Go to stamps.com, and you see in the upper right-hand corner there is a microphone. Now, I want you to click that because the offer is going to be better than the one on the front page. And use the offer code TWIG, T-W-I-G. And this is a no-risk trial. It's a $110 bonus offer. You get the digital scale. You get $55 in postage coupons. You get the month trial. All you do is pay shipping and handling for the scale. I think that's $5. It is a really great deal. And scale's yours to keep forever. You can cancel it anytime. Scale's yours to keep forever. Stamps.com. Never go to the post office again. Get discounts you can't get at the post office. The mail carrier comes and gets the mail. You don't have to get up from your seat. Well, maybe you do to open the door. Stamps.com. Give it a try today. All right. Who's first? Jeff, you wanted to say something?
Well, let me just say one more bit on Twitter, Gina, then I absolutely want to hear that conversation. But I was going to discuss this last week. The NASCAR page. NASCAR now basically owns the hashtag. And I wondered about that online, and I said, is there anything wrong with that? And people said, well, no, not as long as everything makes it through. But then I saw some reference that it's a curated page.
Ooh.
If I say NASCAR is awful for making near death into a spectator sport.
That ain't going to happen.
And that doesn't end up on that page. Then have they now restricted, have they now turned hashtags, the platform of the people, into something that a brand can buy and control? That's a question I don't know the answer. That's what I'm asking.
Boy,
this is search results for hashtag NASCAR.
Yes,
NASCAR?
Yes.
It's brand. So if you search for hashtag NASCAR,
you get a branded page.
This is a very branded page.
Yep.
Okay.
Not a search result anymore. By the way, you can also go directly by twitter.com and hashtag NASCAR instead of at NASCAR, hashtag NASCAR.
I have a serious problem with this. If it is cured, if your tweet got pulled out of that, then yeah, I think that.
Well, let me tweet something.
That's what I'm just doing too. Right?
Oh, we're doing this live. Fantastic.
We are live. We are slamming NASCAR live. Not that we'd really slam them. We're just curious what'll happen. I have to say, in every case, these are love Dale Jr., love Danica. In fact, Danica is tweeting. Love Jeff Gordon's tweeting. Daryl Waltrip's tweeting. These are curated. This is clearly curated. Because it goes back. Because I could guarantee. Well, no, you don't even have to. I'll tell you this right now. It starts.
So what that means.
It goes back to the 17th of June in like four clicks.
Okay. You know, I don't like this at all, because the hashtag is what enables things like Occupy Wall Street to exist, right, and FU Washington to exist. Yes. And if someone can buy that and then control it, so you get to the point of, you know, Romney hashtag.
Right.
And what, if I want to say critical things to Romney, it's not going to show up on a search for Romney? And you can pay for that privilege?
I wonder. I should.
So here it looks like there's a button to click to view search, the actual search results, not the the sponsored page.
Oh, view search results. I see it. You're right. Right there next to tweets, there's view search results. And then is it different? Let's see.
Then you get top, and then you have to click all again.
Then you get top, right? Now
I see Kevin's tweet.
So let's break this down. You type NASCAR into the search box, and you don't get search results. You get NASCAR's sponsored page, which then says view all search results. So you click on that, and then you get top tweets, which are very popular.
No. If you search for NASCAR, you get the NASCAR search results. If you click hashtag NASCAR, you get the now it's giving me the search results.
If I when I went to Google and searched, when I do hashtag NASCAR in the search, I get the NASCAR page.
I don't. Maybe I've indicated that. You know what? I clicked the thing that says show search. I apparently have switched something off.
Yeah, because when I did it the first time, I went to the sponsored page, and now that I've done it again, I went straight to the search results, and I had clicked view search results, so maybe
that's
you turn it off.
That's a whole different UI issue.
Yeah, that's a different UI issue, but... telling someone that they're searching for a word and sending them to a sponsored page is a very strange UI decision.
That is control. I mean, even if it were just sponsored, when I first asked the question, if they just had an ad on that page, I wouldn't object. Right? You're interested in NASCAR. Here's a NASCAR ad. We want to get a message across to you. You know, go watch people try to kill themselves. Okay. But the fact that they have control over what we say about that topic,
this is really interesting. Now, if I go to twitter.com, hashtag twit, not at twit, but hashtag twit, it takes me to the twit canonical page, which is not, by the way, authorized. I mean, it is our page, but it's not, like, officially approved. So, but if I search for twit, then I get a search result. So I guess they've changed what twitter.com hashtag means. And if I do hashtag OWS, I get a page as OWS. So they're confused. They're muddling it.
They are.
It's not clear what you're going to get.
We've talked on the show in the past about, and I don't go quite this far, but the sanctity of search. That when people search, this is what they expect to get. And so I thought there'd be more of a hubbub, and I thought, well, now I'm wrong. It's just people on Twitter just said, not the company, but just users. Said, no, it's just an ad on the page.
I think what it's doing is reflecting Twitter culture. All of these changes are now reflecting how people are using Twitter, which is as a brand, it's a stream. It's not about us users. It's about the brands and,
the way Twitter is seeing it, you're saying.
I think the reason there's not an uproar is because people go, that's what Twitter is.
A place to follow brands.
Yeah.
I was going to say, this seems more like how Twitter wants people to use Twitter.
I don't. That's not why I use Twitter. I mean, yes, I know.
But you're an old fart.
That's 2 weeks ago. Well, I know.
This is the thing that Josh was saying at Le Web, was that this is how they conceive of Twitter now. They conceive of it as this place where you follow people who don't follow you back. You follow famous people, you follow famous things.
Exactly.
They ask you to search for NASCAR and Lady Gaga and football and whatever the hell else. As part of the sign-up process, that before they even ask you to connect to your friends, so they want you to understand it in that mode before that you understand it as a communications tool to talk to your friends.
But that's I mean, listen, I nice people at Twitter, but that's not a platform for the people. That's not a platform that enables revolutions.
No,
that's a wholly different thing. Now tie it to the previous functionality you mentioned, right? So now you're Lady Gaga. Now on your page, not the search for you, but the user page, now you can get rid of all that riffraff conversation and just give your message out. Your NASCAR, your Nestle.
Thank God.
Just get your advertising message out. Clue Train Manifesto, folks. Should we send them a few copies? Markets are conversations. They're not messages. So anyway, thank you.
And by the way, now that Twitter's doing it, how long before Facebook and everybody and all the other social networks start doing it? Because it is a business model. It's a good business model.
Yeah, it is.
Twitter going IPO any day now?
That's what the chat room
is saying. Thing that Facebook has done. I mean, Facebook made a distinction between personal pages and brand pages, right? So you end up with two.
Right.
And then they've recently blurred that a bit by letting people follow you on your personal page as well. So you can follow people without them having to friend you. So they're converging a bit more. And I think they learned a lot from Twitter, where Twitter didn't make this thing you have to be a person. You could be an entity or a joke, and you can still create this thing that's there. And I think Twitter's now...
Well, now to Gina's point. So, Gina, you were going to curate the conversations. And then I want to mention, after you do that, there's a new service from an MP in the UK that's trying to do the same thing. So why don't you do first?
Yes, this is good. Yeah, that we were going to talk about. What is it, Blaze?
It's Branch. So Branch. It's beta.branch.com. And it's invite only right now. But one of the ones I was involved in actually got to the front page of All Things D. So if you go to allthingsd.com, under must reads, there's a link that says owning your own words. Is it important? That's a link to a Branch conversation.
Interesting. Is this an All Things D? What?
Yeah, go under must reads, and then
I'm confused.
Under that red label right down there on the left.
Okay, is owning your words important?
Owning our words. So that's a link to a Branch conversation.
This is not an article on All Things D. This is
no. This is just a link. So Branch is the foo camp of Twitter conversations. You get invited. So somebody starts a conversation and then invites a couple people to participate. And they can respond, and then they can invite other people. So Josh Miller started this conversation, invited Anil, who invited me, and MG Siegler, and Paul Ford, and a few people. And
oh, this all, is only a people very who, clever way to spread a beta.
Yeah, it really is. So only the people who are invited to the conversation or the people they've invited can post.
And Gina, does the person who starts the Branch is the one who has control over it.
Exactly. The person who starts
the
Branch.
That's what Nick Denton is doing. Nick Denton is doing where in any comment thread post there,
right.
When you start a comment, you control the rest of the thread based on your comment. Mm. So this is a similar way to do it.
So the idea is to make high quality conversation with people you want.
It's kind of Quora-ish.
It's Quora-ish. But,
what it reminds me of is the group blogs we used to use back in 2001 when we were talking about Glue Train, where this was we just used Blogger and gave six people contribution rights, and then you would write posts to each other. So for me, it's like a trip back in time 10 years when that was the tool we had. And the reason we did it then was that that was before we built Technorada. There wasn't a notification mechanism, so you'd have to go back to the same place to check it. And the secondary reason was then you can control who can respond to it. But it was also because at that time blogs didn't have comments by default. That was they were independent mechanisms.
Gina, what do you think about this? The fact
this is
that
this
is a closed room. It's cool, but it's also a closed room. It says the conversation is concluded. Nobody else can comment. Yeah, you get rid of the riffraff, but you also talk about echo chambers.
Well, yeah. Your own echo chamber. Key is not to invite Scoble at any time.
I mean, that's the thing. I really mixed feelings about it. I have the same mixed feelings about this as I have about Foo, right? Like, Foo was a fantastic experience. This is a great conversation. I've been in two Branch conversations, and both of them have been very high quality with people who I admire and who I, if I sent them an email, I probably wouldn't get a response because they're just really busy, right? So it's the exclusivity kind of brings out folks, who maybe wouldn't respond otherwise if it was open to everyone. At the same time, I had a bunch of people on Twitter saying, like, please, please, please invite me to Branch. Why can't I participate? So it gives you that experience of like, oh well, no, just the cool kids are you didn't make it past the velvet rope. So it's hard. I mean, interestingly, Dave Weiner was invited, and he basically said, I'm not going to write for free on someone else's site. I'm going to write on my own blog. You can link to it from there.
Yeah, which Dave won't do interviews. and I like this. If a reporter calls Dave, this is not always the case, but a reporter calls Dave and says, I want to ask you something. He says, if I care about the topic, I'll write that on my blog and everybody can see it. And if I don't care, I won't. And that's the deal.
Yeah. Now, you can apply for an invitation. This is now currently a closed beta, but you can put your email in there and it says, well, So it may at some point become, well, I guess, no, each conversation will be invite only, though, right?
Each conversation is invite only. So you could start a conversation. So, Leo, it was interesting. Like, this weekend, you asked a question, which I saw, and you were getting a bunch of replies, and I went to your profile and was, you know, wanted to see how you responded to everyone, to the people who replied to that original question. That's interesting to me. I wanted to see your conversation with everyone. Mm-hmm. And so this to get back to what we started with originally, this change to verified profiles where by default you don't see the person's replies, that's I don't like that. I mean, I want to see people with tons, millions of followers like you.
With the conversation.
Engaging with the riffraff. I mean,
right.
You know, that's like, it's like the best part of Twitter is seeing your heroes interact.
But there's a place in the world for authoritative people to have a private.
Ooh, authoritative. Ooh, that's just so.
I'm an elitist.
Leo, and we're elitist idiot.
I would imagine you using this, let's say, to do your debate about cyber hawkism,
right?
Right,
and we do. I would love it if there were what I'd love to see is kind of this is the main channel invite only, and then there's a side channel of comments.
It's like the Economist debates, which is what you're talking about. Yeah. The problem
like
the Economist debates.
Look at this is what broadcasting is. You know, you can't. So it's exactly like Twit. Right now, you're on the three of you are on this show by invitation only, but we do have a chat room, and you can respond, and we respond back. So I think this is a balanced way of doing it. I'm an elitist.
You're left out.
Well, I think
let the chat room eat cake.
They often want to be on the show, and I won't let them.
I think a lot of people really want to be on Twit.
Good. I would love for them all to be on it. We need new blood, of course.
It's a scaling issue.
In broadcast, it is totally a scaling issue, and I would submit that it just because it's the internet, it doesn't mean that you can't you shouldn't be able to have a kind of limited conversation.
I know, but I'm just
saying
you can do whatever you want
to conversation anyway, right? There's a difference between here's a limited conversation and here's the piece of the conversation you can see.
Right.
True, all that true, and I could just do a blog and allow no comments. So that's I can absolutely do that.
Well, we could do a Google Hangout. You know, when we had the WWDC announcement. I did a Google Hangout in which I only invited people in my tech journalist circle. Now, it was open to those 100 people, and 8 of them joined us. Those people got a say. So it's a little more democratic, but it's not fully democratic.
No, that's all true, but I just, if I were to use Branch, I think people would say, oh, so you're scared of talking to the public, huh? Mr. Public there.
Well, I would use all of the above. I mean...
Yeah.
Right.
This is another service just out called Menshn, M-E-N-S-H-N, M-E-N-S-H-N.com. Not to be confused, it started by an MP in the UK named Louise Mensch.
Oh, this is
her
interesting.
Name has a C in it. Her argument here is that she wants to have, that it's hard to have a conversation around a topic. That on Twitter, it just is everything flowing at the same time.
Right.
And I complain on Twitter the problem that this makes a media mistake of saying, well, we will tell you what you're going to discuss. It was a very bad accent.
Well, couldn't you create a topic?
She came back and said people can suggest topics. Louise did, me and Twitter. Louise Mensch is a conservative MP, a Tory MP, and she was part of the hearings with Murdoch and all that.
It's interesting because this is mainly about the U.S. election.
That's what she did. No, she did it to start off with just the U.S. because it's a bigger market. That's the way the Brits got it, right, Kevin? That's why you're here.
I'm going to take a break. I want to mention that we are going to do a triangulation this afternoon with Doc Searles, one of the authors of the Clue Train Manifesto.
So, great interview.
Since we were talking Clue Train, let's have Doc on. And he's got a new book, actually, called The Attention is the... Intention economy.
The intention economy about vendor relationship as opposed to customer relationship management.
So this conversation will continue. But see, maybe I'm elitist because I come from media, mainstream media, which has this limit, this technical limit of, you know, you can't have a conversation with 1,000 people because it's, you know, it's live.
Have that limit.
Yeah, but we don't have it anymore. That's right.
No.
And I do a radio show where any idiot can call. And often does.
And God bless them, everyone.
No, even there you have call screening, which allows you to control how You can actually, and in many, and I would say in many mainstream radio shows, you actually want the idiots. You actually tune out the smart people. You don't the call. Literally, this is not a joke. The call screener. Really? If you're too verbal and intelligent, say, you know, call Rush Limbaugh because we don't want to talk. And then and so what you want is idiots because it makes a much more interesting radio show, frankly.
Or makes you seem smarter when only idiots talk.
Well, that's another interpretation.
Well, I mean, these are idiots asking for tech help, right? It's like, no, there's no any key. Like, it's not a cup holder.
We filter those out.
Okay. It's a CD tray.
If I get to the point where I need to look smarter, I'll start getting those calls more. You control it. But it does feel more democratic, I have to say. This is interesting that it made it to Must Reads in All Things D.
Yeah,
I was surprised by that. I mean, I guess that's their kind of links.
Right, it's from other websites, but it's cool.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to take a break, come back with more. What a great panel we have here. Kevin Marks from Ferry Plaza in San Francisco. Every once in a while, the bells ring. Jeff Jarvis from BuzzMachine.com. And, of course, Gina Trapani from SmarterWare.org. And you can find Kevin on TunnelVision.tv. That's his weekly podcast about tunneling. Meanwhile, let's talk a little bit about GoToMyPC, the best remote access tool out there, GoToMyPC.com. It connects your Mac or PC at the office to the world so that you can go to work wherever you are, not just from your Mac or PC, from your iPad, from your iPhone. They've got free apps for both. Android, too. That is so cool. That is so cool. So here's the deal. You could try this right now. If you visit GoToMyPC.com, click the Try It Free button and use our offer code TWIG, 30 days, unlimited use, free. Now, do that from your desktop because you're going to want to install this on your desktop. It could be, I say office because that's how most people use it. It could be your home computer. Whatever computer you want to be accessible anytime, anywhere. Securely, too, by the way. It's 128-bit SSL. It's password protected. They use NAT traversal, so that means you don't have to punch a hole in your router and open any security holes. It's really... to my knowledge, there's never been a security exploit with GoToMyPC. It's the remote access to use. Absolutely secure and fast because Citrix knows remote access. They're the guys or gals or people. Visit it right now. GoToMyPC.com on your Mac or your PC. Install it. Take a second or two to install. And then hit the road with your iPhone or your iPad or your Android tablet and start getting your work done. Send and receive email, run any program, access any network resource, just like you're there. It's kind of wild to run, say, Windows on an Android tablet. It's just a weird feeling, but it works. So you get mouse gestures, mouse control, full keyboard, all of it. GoToMyPC.com. Try it today. Use the offer code TWIG. Were you going to write me a check? Go ahead and do that. I saw you were doing a check there. Just make it out to cash. GoToMyPC.com. So there's mention. There's... See, I have to admit, I want an invite.
to Branch?
Anything.
Now that you've been invited into a conversation, do you have the power to start a conversation?
Yeah, I think so.
Uh-oh.
I'm telling you, do not invite Scoble. by the way, I wanted to mention Kevin is... One other reason Kevin Marks is here is this is the 7th anniversary of Micro Formats. Woohoo!
It is, hey. Yes.
Woohoo! What are micro formats?
Micro formats are ways of adding extra meaning to your HTML so that they can make more sense for computers as well as for humans.
Things like XFN.
XFN is the XHTML Friends Network that lets you link to other people and say whether they're your friends or your followers or whether they're you. Radicals Me is a really important one. Say this site is also me. It's also things like H card, which lets you create a business card on the page that can be pulled out again straightforwardly. And a series of some other models like that for embedding structured meaning in the page. But what's different about it is that there are alternative versions of this that embed an entirely parallel set of data in the page. If you look at Facebook's OGP, it gives you a bunch of stuff at the top of the page that is independent of what the content is. And part of the point of microformats is that it's using the actual text of the page, just giving some extra hints to the computers reading it as to which piece is which.
And it's open and not...
It's open?
Yeah.
Our standards organization is a wiki. That's how open it is.
Yeah! And by the way, I had really high hopes that this would become the social network, because basically your everybody's page becomes part of a larger social network.
Yes.
And it just it was the right way to do it. But unfortunately,
and it's still there. I mean, the XFN stuff is still there. WordPress publishes it. Blogger publishes it. Twitter used to publish it. I haven't actually looked since their last redesign. I need to double check that. Facebook publishes it, but they made it harder to crawl because they don't serve pages to you unless you say you're a browser. Google Plus profiles still publish XFN. So a bunch of this stuff did exist on the web, but what we've seen is sites instead building closed social networks rather than crawlable ones, which has been tricky.
Yeah. Well, there's still a party tonight, 6:30 at Mozilla in San Francisco. Is it open? Do you have to get an invitation to it?
Yeah, there's an invitation.
Okay. Oh, I see. You invited me.
I invited you, but it's public. I'm pretty sure it's public.
All right. Well, I have been invited, and I invite you.
We're
just like French.
Open, you know. This is the principle. This is a standards body that has that takes a radical openness principle that says anyone can get the standard and will defend it as a wiki would.
Yes, and I defend it. I think it's great. And I don't think it's at all weird that you used Facebook to invite people to your party.
Well, we do that too. We also have a page marked up on the site, and we have a Blankcast link.
Okay.
We used to use Upcoming when that existed, but does it still exist? I don't know. I've actually looked at that page for a few years.
That's what
he's saying. Kevin is having a party already at Ferry Plaza, apparently. LinkedIn is being sued by an Illinois woman that's just in over the password breach. She's suing them for $5 million, brought in federal court in San Jose. It seeks class action status. So this would be a bad precedent. If every site that had a breach of passwords got sued, the whole internet will collapse.
What, is there any reference to actual damages in this?
Yeah, that's why you don't really have a... Katie Zaprika, user of the website from Illinois... used a Illinois-based law firm, Edelson McGuire. She said LinkedIn had deceived customers by having a security policy in clear contradiction of accepted industry standards for database security. LinkedIn says the lawsuit is without merit, that no member count has been breached as a result of the incident, and there's no reason to believe that any LinkedIn member has been injured. In other words, you got to show you were harmed. If nothing happened, sorry. Well, we'll see. This sounds like one of those cases.
I wonder if we're going to get to a point, too, where sites say, as part of their TOS, you may not use a password you use for another site, and if you do, it's your own damn fault.
Ah, because that would be one source of harm, wouldn't it?
Uh-oh, I just gave lawyers an idea.
That's all right. They have plenty of them.
Even more annoying.
Hey, good news. Google Offers is now available on the iPhone. This is something they added. Didn't they add it to Maps, or is it? Oh, no, it's a standalone app.
Standalone app. I just downloaded it for a show starting.
I'm going to download this.
So this is their Groupon.
Which app is this?
Google Offers for the iPhone.
Is it Office? I was thinking.
No, Google Office for the iPhone. Now that's what we need.
Office, what's the thing? Office.
This is like a Groupon. You get, coupons off and all of that.
Which is an old model, I think.
It does feel dated. Now, when SNH Green Stamps does an app, then I'm going to get it.
You remember those, Leo? Did you have to lick those too?
Oh, yeah. Mom would make me...
Wait. Test here. Gina, do you know what an SNH green stamp is?
No idea.
What?
No idea. SNH green stamp? What?
What do you think it is? Okay. Gina, what do you think that stands for? Just let's chat room, what do you think it means?
Then there was blue. Wasn't it like blue, some other stamp? There was gold.
Satanism and...
Gold stamps, gold.
Like that. Yeah, that was the worst stuff.
Yeah. I don't know. Was it like a Willy Wonka chocolate bar thing?
You probably don't remember the days when gas stations would give you plates for filling up either.
Plates?
Yeah.
Like eating plates?
Like dinnerware.
I feel like I've entered some like weird planet. Like my entire reference reality is off. What?
No, a guy, it's kind of weird. You'd pull up at the gas station, a guy would come up to you in a nice white suit with a little hat and say, "Fill her up today, sir. Can I check your oil?" You'd pop the hood, he'd check the oil, he'd fill you up, and then he'd give you a plate.
Okay. Really?
Am I making this up, Jeff?
This was premium marketing, and actually there's a magnificent, wonderful book about the history of the great A&P, which was really the first chain store, and now we live in the era of chain stores dying. And the way they competed with each other was not necessarily on price, because the law, little tiny mom-and-pop grocery stores banded together to fight the chain stores as if they were evil. Gee, it's just like today, people against Google.
Nothing changes.
So they would try to get government regulation to stop it. So the government regulation against consumers' interest would freeze prices high, wouldn't allow you to lower prices. So what they would do is they would instead give you these stamps. And you put these stamps in these books. Poor Leo and I would have to lick these
you
stamps.
You have to lick them.
Then your mother would take in 10 of these books and, you know, get a beach ball or something.
Yeah. Crap. Now, Kevin Crewell in the chat room is reminding me that grocery stores used to sell encyclopedias one letter a month.
Yeah.
So you get the Funk. It was Funk and Wagnalls, and you'd get the encyclopedia. Was it Funk and Wagnalls?
Sesame Street. This month is brought to you by Elle.
Yeah. Yeah. And now get ready for this. Microsoft bought that encyclopedia. And it was the foundation for Encarta.
Oh, Encarta.
Who remembers Encarta?
I remember that.
It was Collier's. Was it Collier's?
Premium marketing. So actually, one of the great moments of premium marketing was Sports Illustrated coming up with the sneaker phone. It was a phone in a sneaker. And the problem was that people started buying. They wanted the phone. They didn't want the damn magazine. And so they'd subscribe just long enough to get the damn phone, and then they'd cancel the magazine. And there were warehouses filled with sneaker phones. And so Time Inc. found itself in the sneaker phone business.
I always wanted a football phone from ESPN, but that's another story for another
day. How the heck did we get on the S&H green
stamps? How did we get S&H stamps?
Blue chip stamps. It was blue chip stamps. Thank you, Web3370 in the chat room. Blue chip stamps, S&H green stamps, and gold bond stamps. It came up with the Google lovers.
Ah, that's right. That's also Randy P. Drinking glasses in laundry detergent.
Yes.
Well, it's like Cracker Jacks. Oh, wait. Gina, you do know Cracker Jacks.
I do know Cracker Jacks. I know about Cracker Jacks.
Well, let me tell you, young lady, the toys today are nothing like
nothing.
The toys
you used to get actual toys.
We used to get cell phones in our Cracker Jacks.
Now you get like a piece of paper that says, this is a toy.
Yeah. Right, like here's a joke on a piece of paper.
Yeah, it's
a
toy. There's your toy. I got your surprise right here.
Next time I fill up, I'm going to be disappointed when the guy with the white hat doesn't show up with a plate. I still don't get the plate thing.
Well, because it was incentive. You go to the... Because this was in the days, I guess, when there was profit in selling gasoline.
I mean, incentive to stock up your kitchen cabinet? I don't understand. Yes. Like,
you'd end up with a whole set of plates. You know, you'd end up with the S&O plates.
Were they collectible plates, but they were different?
No, they were just plates.
It was a set. This month, we're giving away... The Daisy set.
You had to keep going. It was a loyalty program, right? One plate, what's the big deal? But if you want to get the whole thing, you got to come every...
There's a Pawn Stars episode about this, isn't there?
Oh, I'm sure there is.
It's got to be.
This is why Jeff and I feel so disoriented in the modern world. This is just beginning. Gina, you're going to see this in 20, 30 years. I don't know, 50 years. You're going to see this because what's happening is it's accelerating. So the disorientation that Jeff and I feel is minor compared to what you're going to feel like when you're our age. You're going to say, I remember when there was a Google. And they'll go,
things called stores you used to go to get things.
Remember those flip phones and you press numbers on them?
You remember that.
Grandma,
what's a phone?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to imagine even what it will be like.
It's true.
Google says 12... I don't know. Is this a number I should check first?
No, but I'm glad you're bringing us back to home.
Google says 12 to 14 million searches per day returned hacked sites.
But 12 to 14 million searches relative to what? I mean, how many searches are there per day?
I think what they're doing is bragging 12 to 14 million times a day. They protect you by warning you.
By the way, our site is, as in the past from time to time, been that. But this is year-to-year infected sites discovered monthly. It actually peaked in 2009, and it's been going somewhat down since then. Attack sites discovered monthly, on the other hand, is going up. So infected sites versus attack sites. Attack sites are sites specifically built to distribute malware. More of those discovered. Legitimate sites compromised. Apparently, people are getting smarter about locking their sites down. Yeah, that's, you know, because I think, isn't this the anniversary of when Google started? It was, how many years ago? Like, see, it's been a while that Google started warning people about infected sites. I think so.
5 years.
Yeah.
5 years since we officially announced malware and phishing protection via our safe browsing effort.
Thank you, Google. Now everybody does it, but thank you, Google. You started it. Venice Beach bodybuilders fear Google is kicking sand at them.
This is just a funny quote. Google is buying a whole bunch of Venice stuff, and that's where Schwarzenegger, you know, built his body, and it's filled with all these gyms.
Gold's Gym, yeah.
And there's a great quote, and they're not going to find it.
Google moved an army of sales and technology employees into 100,000 square feet in two Venice buildings. I love Venice. It's kind of down market. But if you ever want to get a marijuana club card, $20. Just in case you're curious.
I want Leo, can you do a show high?
No. I used to. You know, when I was a younger than Gina even, man. I think at one time I might have done a radio show somewhat out of it.
Oh, calling the FCC. So
the quote.
Story, Nathaniel Moon, bulging with muscles, called this, quote, the ultimate revenge of the nerds, the greatest way of getting back at all the guys that stuffed people from Google into lockers from high school and stole all their prom dates.
I'll show you. We're going to buy your gym.
And you can't fight against Google because they've got billions of dollars. But he added, I love their search engine.
Google is not the only culprit here. The old world gym at the top of Abbot Kinney, the place that was Arnold Schwarzenegger's gym, has also been sold and is no longer a gym. It's a high-end shops and offices. And guess who bought it? And will be a future tenant. Arnold Schwarzenegger. Take that! I'm going to buy you, and then I will shred you. Google is responding to the new British investigation of Street View.
I know Chad just put that in there just to get to me.
It's just for you.
You know, when is Google going to say this was all stuff that was just, I mean, we don't like it. It was stupid. It was wrong. But it was all broadcast publicly on the airwaves. What's illegal about it?
Google says, we're surprised to find ourselves confronting yet another investigation.
And then the next story is that now we have U.S. government officials going after Google and Apple because they're freaked that they're both flying planes with cameras over us.
That's, I was a little freaked.
Job, don't you know?
But I, you know, it's not so much I'm worried about the pictures. I just feel like we have air forces, private air forces above us. Taking,
like swarming over us.
Swarming.
Pins above our locations.
Yeah.
Actually,
I don't think it's like that. In fact, it's probably, as somebody pointed out, same contractors working for both probably, right?
Yeah, they're probably doing things for government.
Yeah.
I was at MIT Media Lab night thing the last 2 days, and a lot of talk about journalistic use of camera drones to cover things like demonstrations. And there were examples of you put a camera into a drone and you can fly over a demonstration to get to stuff that you know beyond the police barricades.
Right.
There was one example of it being done with
a helicopter. Yeah.
Or with little helicopters or balloons. Or I think there was one story that I saw this on Twitter when I was out of the room, but somebody did it to try to get hunters and the hunter shot it down.
You know, it's probably a good idea not to fly planes over people with weapons.
Yeah.
Just a hint. At least not if they don't like you. Now, Facebook has acquired Face.com, so they're going to get even better facial recognition built into Facebook. Apparently, Facebook can do it pretty well on desktop, but the mobile's not so good. Face.com's got a good mobile app. According to Mike Isaac on All Things D, the deal was about much less than it was originally reported, somewhere in the $50 to $60 million range. Face.com's very happy. I mean, I don't have any problem with face recognition. Now, no. if you use Apple to the iPhone to turn on face, no, I guess Aperture or iPhone to turn on face recognition. It goes right up to Facebook, adds it to the Facebook. We're all working together now. It's okay. We all know who you are. Facebook says we are going to sell ads based on your web browsing. A new Facebook system will use your activity on other websites. Must be the like button, right? To send you what Facebook thinks are...
No, it's more than the like button. If you were near a purchase opportunity, it'll remember that. This has been done for quite some time.
Well, now Facebook's adding... You're going to have to click it because they can tell what page you're on because they loaded an iframe with the like button in it.
Right. So the like button sees where you're going. But here's the example from Doug Gross writing on CNN.com. Say a Facebook user visits a travel website, clicks on a page about a vacation package to Vegas. If an advertiser has a bid on that kind of search, that user could then see ads for discounted trips to Vegas the next time they visit Facebook. But how is Facebook getting that information? So in other words, Facebook's saying advertisers.
This is not new. There was a company called Takoda, started by a friend of mine that was bought by AOL and then ruined and shut down, where the deal was, and the New York Times did this. You went to the New York Times, you went to a travel page about Vegas, you left, and you went to weather.com to check the weather there, but New York Times still had another travel ad they wanted to give you. They couldn't. Takoda would show you a travel ad at weather.com. And the split was that... Weather.com would get 40% of the ad for delivering the media, delivering you. New York Times would get 20% of the deal for delivering the data point about you, and Takoda would get 20% of the deal for making them come together.
So it's not a third-party cookie. It's not a Facebook cookie. It's the site you went to saying, quick, buy an ad on Facebook in case they go back there.
I mean, I think kind of, yeah. I mean, everything is a third party. Go back to that. No. But this is not a new model. I'm sure we'll hear... horrors and hubbubs coming up very soon, but it's a model that's been in for a decade.
But both the sites have to have this code embedded on them somehow. I think I just assumed it was the like button that was sending information back, like, oh, this IP visited here.
That's the difference. You're right, Gina. The question is, if you're the site that created the data point because of the interest point,
right,
in the Takoda
right.
model, you'd get a share of that deal. In the Facebook model, I'm not sure you do, but you have willingly put the like button up on your site, so I'm sure somewhere you sign something saying that it'd be okay.
Right.
So you're saying no big deal, SOP.
Well, that will be the reaction. The reaction will be...
right.
Wait for the Wall Street Journal. It'll be up any minute.
And it's just to give you... So what's different is that Facebook is now selling these ads... offering these ads to people.
Facebook's doing it, and what they've added to it is that it's a live bidding structure.
Right.
So if you really want to get somebody, you can bid against someone else. So it brings that Google view of the auction into this and says, hey, we just found somebody who wants to go to Vegas. Who wants them? What are they worth to you?
Or like if you're Zappos and somebody has gone to the checkout page but canceled.
Right.
Now you're going to see that.
Zappos can say, show this person Zappos ads when they're on Facebook to remind them.
Or somebody else can come in and say, if a frustrated Zappos buyer comes in, send them to me.
Right. Shoes.com or whatever. Yeah.
You can apparently.
They can bid for those ads.
You can apparently turn this off. Good luck finding this setting. I just
think there's something that I did already. So if you go to a certain site, then will show you banner ads that relate to that all over the rest of the web.
Yeah, this is a tracking cookie, right?
Yeah.
Ads. So I went to Facebook privacy settings, ads, apps, and websites.
It keeps...
It's not...
It's, I looked through ads. It. I don't see it. And I'm looking at this article again, which supposedly tells us how, but I... It's anyway. We leave this as an exercise for the reader.
It's literally seven clicks in. Ads shown by third parties.
Well, while you're in there, turn everything off. Yeah, turn it all off. You don't need that.
If you're Jeff, don't.
Jeff, you leave it on.
And I've been seeing complaints lately. Right, I've seen this like three or four times. It's become a kind of a meme where people do screenshots of the ads that Facebook has for them and mocks them for being so untargeted.
Right.
It's like, right. The more information that you share,
in fact,
the better
we more often mock Facebook for the crappy ads than we do for the right audience. Yeah. Yeah.
So, now, by the way, I just went to Facebook, and what is it giving me? It's giving me the Galaxy S3. Smart of you, Facebook.
Good ad.
Yeah, me too. Good I'm getting ad. That same ad as well.
Really? I wonder what I'm getting.
They're listening to us, Gina.
So here's the question. Do they know that I have a Galaxy S3 already, and are they going to advertise something else? Yes, they are. They're advertising HP something, it's not clear, write code for MATLAB, play Marvel game, a Kiss and Motley Crue concert coming up on the 15th at Shoreline, diesel performance parts for my Ford.
Okay.
That's the first one that's actually fit anything. Facebook combat game and Barrett Jackson car auction from Orange County. They think I'm into cars. I liked Ford. That's why. I did a like button on the Ford page. That's why. This is the longest day of the year, but not the longest show of the year. We're going to take a break and come back, and we will get our tool tip and pick. Google Play little tip is slashing prices on apps, music, and books for the longest day of the year sale. Summer solstice. Go check your Google Play to see if you could find some 99-cent apps. There are Beach Reads at $1.99. And many famous albums are marked at $2.99 a title. Draw Something is discounted. You know what? Don't buy it. It'll be heavily discounted soon. Rihanna's Loud. Rolling Stones' Brussels Affair. Okay, fine. Meanwhile, have you backed up lately? Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to tell you about Carbonite.com. Back up, done, right. Carbonite, my friend David Friend, who's the CEO there, founder of it, a serial entrepreneur, he was the guy who started ARP synthesizers out of college. He had retired. He was enjoying life. And then his college-age daughter called him in tears, said, Daddy, I just lost my thesis and it's gone. What do I do? And he said, yeah, there's got to be a better way to back up. And he came up with Carbonite. Now, to bring it full circle, when I sent my daughter to college freshman year, what did I put on her laptop? Carbonite, so that she would not call me crying about her thesis. Now she cries about boys and other appropriate things. Carbonite is a backup plan for your home office, or small business. I'll tell you what, you got to try it. It starts at $59 a year, less than $5 a month for that laptop. Everything on that drive automatically, whenever she's online, even at an open access spot of the campus store. No problem, because it's 128-bit SSL. If you really want privacy, you can use your own strong encryption, and nobody, not even Carbonite, knows the password, just you. They also have apps for the iPhone, the Android phone, tablets, too, that let you see your data. So even if a disaster doesn't happen, it's cloud storage, too. This is a really great service. I want you to try it right now. Carbonite.com. $59 is the starting point, but it's free for the first 2 weeks when you use our offer code TWIG. And if you decide, do that when you try it. I always like you to try it first because it uses your bandwidth and everything. You want to make sure it's right for you. But if you do use the offer code TWIG when you try it, you will get 14 months when you buy your one-year subscription. 14 months for the price of 12, 2 months free. Backup done right. Carbonite. Try it today. All right, Gina Trapani, your tip of the week.
Tip of the week, you can now customize your Gmail theme. So you can upload your own background image, essentially. When you're in Gmail, if you go to settings and then themes, I'm doing it right now. Oh, there's a section that says custom themes. So you choose, it's pretty simple. You choose light or dark, and then you can set a background image. And they've got a bunch of background images that you can use that are already there.
Oh, that's nice.
You can upload one of your own photos, or, you know, add a Google Plus URL. It's nice. I mean, you know, someone made a comment about how MySpace failed because people made it look so ugly.
Yeah, but only you have to see this.
Only you have to see this. And I think it's nice. Hey, there's this one photo of a baby. It's nice kind of have a picture of your family or something in your email to remind you to get out of your inbox and go spend time with them.
Yeah,
or
really.
Just pretty.
See these
pretty
people? The Do you remember these people? They remember you.
They remember you.
And they're wondering, where the hell have you been? I love it that it takes my Google Plus photos, actually Picasso photos as well. So I could, Here, I'll just put this junked up computer lab in the background. And did it do it? Is it still doing it? It's loading it. There it is. Now I have garbage in the background. Electronic garbage. That's kind of like cool.
More clutter than your inbox.
Yeah, I like it. I like it. And a plug.
Oh, yeah, shameless plug. Kevin Purdy, who's been a guest here on Twig a few times, and I are doing a new tech podcast. It's called In Beta. Check it out, 5by5.tv/inbeta.
It just started. Oh, no, you've got three of them now. You've been cranking them out.
Yeah, we're three episodes in, so we're just starting to get our groove.
Free bacon and tight T-shirts.
Yeah, we were talking about conferences there. There's no video like Twit. It's just audio.
Thank
but
God.
Something.
Thank God. That Dan Benjamin, he really frosts my mug. No, actually, Andy and he doesn't, actually. I love Dan, and he's doing a great job. And Andy Iannocco is also on there with Andy Iannocco's Almanac in beta. So you talk about web and open source software.
Open source, web-based, social, mobile apps. Just basically, really, I kind of stole the idea from Jeff, this idea of beta culture, like, you know, what happens when you put things out there that aren't complete and aren't finished and you know, iterate quickly the way that we do these days instead of just, you know, issuing out kind of completely finished products. Kind of the good part and the bad part.
And he does something we should probably have done, which is he has an app, that 5x5 radio app, that it's $3, so he gets a little money that way, which is good, always nice. Mm-hmm. And then you have all the shows just kind of in there, including the schedule. Now, I know some of his shows, he broadcasts the recording live. Does he do that with you?
Yeah, he does. We do live stream. And actually, the app is for the live stream, so you can say, hey, notify me when beta starts, so you get a push notification. It's an iOS app. And yeah, we do it, although it's a lot more DIY than Twit. Twit's great. You know, you guys all handle everything for us, but with 5x5, I'm kind of running the broadcast myself.
That's all right. That's good for you.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been fun.
You do those Thursdays at 1?
Tuesdays. At 1 Eastern, 10 okay. a.m. Pacific. It changes, though, so you check the schedule.
Good. Well, get the app.
My editor, Ben Lunan, wanted me to make the follow-up book to What Would Google Do, a book called Beta.
Ah.
Yeah, I remember you'd scrap that idea, right, Jeff?
Yeah, I at first liked the idea, and then I actually should send you the Prezi on it. I did a Prezi with kind of how it affects everything of life. And then after I did the Prezi, I kind of thought, well, all right, I've thought this all through. And then I sat down trying to write it, and I said,
you weren't feeling it.
Wasn't feeling it, so that's when I did public parts and got in all kinds of trouble.
But I'm sure there's pressure to do book three soon.
I think maybe I could do it as a Kindle single.
Yeah, you did the Gutenberg. By the way, that's a great Kindle single, 99 cents.
Thank you very much. I'm going to do a post coming up on all the sales reports and results.
Oh, I'd love to see how that worked for you. I'm sure a lot of other authors are paying attention. Now, our number of the week, 9.9 million.
That's how much Jack Dorsey spent for his new house. I'm sure he did it with the square. And the pictures are pretty amazing. And it's only two bedrooms, but it has a view.
Wait a minute. He has a $10 million house. It's two bedrooms? Jack,
as they say,
Jack, spend another million and have a third bedroom. I hope it's got three baths.
It's phenomenal. It's
it does look beautiful. Look at that.
The river, I was going to say. The bridge is great. So this is a little bit of real estate voyeurism, but I had no good numbers this week, so this rescued me.
The Daily Mail says it's a hideout worthy of a James Bond villain. This is where the money's going, huh? I'm jealous. Look at that. It's gorgeous. Where is that? Is that in Tiburon?
No, it's in San Francisco. So it must get fogged in constantly. If you go down, you see the view of the bridge he has.
Where in San Francisco could that be?
Well, there. See?
Oh. No, yeah, that's nice.
So
I've got a number for you.
All right.
My number is zero. Google is paying zero damages to Oracle. That just came out.
Oh, my God. There it is. That court case, which was, of course, Oracle suing Google for its use of Java without credit and use of particularly two routines. They lost on trademark or copyright issues, and they apparently lost also on patent issues. And well, actually, it was a mixed bag on copyright issues, but apparently the value of the award, $0. $0. Did they? I think were damages paid to Google here or no? I guess not.
Well, there was statutory damages.
Statutory damages, okay.
Because the nine lines of code was was that, you know, saying that was seen as copyright infringement.
Right.
The judge of the system is zero.
Zero. Yeah, the judge was not pleased. He said, look, I've written a range check. I can write a range check in my sleep. You can't copyright a range check. That's my kind of judge.
Love that guy.
Love that guy.
Love that guy.
What are you talking about? I taught myself Java, and I wrote a range check, and there's nothing to it. Nothing to it.
Everybody in this courtroom could do it. The lawyer was like, I
could
do it.
Yeah, that was right. That's Geek Love, just sent to you from Gina Trapani.
Less than three.
Also, do you want to do any of the other? You got three numbers, Jeff. You got a ton of them.
No, they were crappy numbers.
Crappy numbers. Let's not do them. Yeah. I like 9.9 million. That's a good number.
Yep.
It's a beautiful house, but you're right. They took the pictures. This is from the Sotheby's listing. The house was actually, I got to say, Jack got a deal. It was listed 4 years ago for twice as much. So, and these pictures were obviously taken on the one sunny day. I do hope Jack checked.
Yeah, for those of you who aren't in San Francisco, when you go out that far, you got the Sunset District not that far, it is just pure fog.
Yeah.
Cat feet hell.
Yeah. Well, you're actually outside the Golden Gate there, right?
Yeah.
It's freezing cold and windy, but if you...
It really is.
Jack, invite me. I'll wear a windbreaker. Well,
but the thing is, that fog has a weird edge to it. So it may be that he's got a house in the bit that's actually sunny.
Right.
Because that fog is stable. It's the same place every day. There's this really bizarre time lapse that people shoot of it where it just comes and appears and looks around the same place and goes away again. And then morning comes back in the evening. So he may be sticking on a bit that isn't actually foggy.
I used to live out there. It's foggy. I did not live in that house.
Plus, if you go to work, you're at work when the sun's out
right.
home. And whenever you're home, it's cold and foggy.
But Jack Dorsey is not confirming that he's the new owner because, of course, he wants privacy. But it is a beautiful house. These are the pictures that were taken for the real estate brochure. So Jack will have better, I think, a better furnishings than that.
Yes.
I certainly hope so. Nice. Very nice. My tool of the week is, I was looking for a good launcher for the Galaxy S3. I don't mind TouchWiz, Samsung's default interface. It's fine, but it was taking up more space on the screen than I wanted. And I wanted something that would let me get more icons on here, eliminate the silly row of buttons that show you what page you're on in the homepage. And, I asked the chat room and they gave me two very good recommendations. One is called Apex, and one is called Nova. This is Nova. I chose Nova because it was a little bit, for this screen resolution, it was a little bit better at the layout. I have six rows from top to bottom, five across. I'm able to turn off labels on the icons, which saves me space. It's got a really nice dock that you can make as big as you want and put some special icons in there. I use direct dial and direct text icons so I can quickly reach people. Then really nice. Nova, it's called. There's a free version, and then... for extra features, you can pay a couple of bucks, and I think it's worth it. There are some really great launcher replacements. There are a dozen of them or more. A lot of people like Go Launcher, which is free. This Nova and Apex are specifically for Ice Cream Sandwich, and add some really, really nice features. This is a good partner for a Samsung Galaxy S3, which is now available as of today, I think, for most of the carriers in the U.S. And a phone I once again highly recommend. I just loves it. Hey, thank you for being here. We appreciate it. Jeff Jarvis is at buzzmachine.com. His book, Public Parts, is a must-read. Get it soon. And it's so good to see you back home in Oyster Bay or wherever the hell it is you live. So, I don't know. Kevin Marks apparently lives at the Ferry Building, and I think that's a good place.
Poor Kevin is homeless. We need to do a Kickstarter to get Kevin a home.
Look for his box right next to Justin Herman Plaza. No, actually, Kevin's got a beautiful...
I was homeless this weekend because I was over... our house was being termite tented.
Oh, dear.
So we were at Half Moon Bay all weekend.
Oh, dear.
So that was actually really nice. But yeah, I did it on this weekend.
It's a beautiful day in San Francisco, we can tell. There's lovely. No fog on the bay today.
Just you wait.
We really appreciate you being there, Kevin. It's always great to have you. And, of course, to Gina Trapani, who is the spiritual hacker soul of this little confab. You could find her at smarterware.org and at Google+. and at thinkupapp.com. Thank you, Gina. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you for joining us. We do This Week in Google Wednesdays, 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 2100 UTC. We invite you to join live. We love the chat room. It is democracy, unless you piss off one of the mods, and then all bets are off. And
chat room's awesome.
It's so great. We love the chat room. Really do. So that's why you want to watch live. But if you can't...
Chat room screams, off with your heads.
Ah! If you can't, let them eat cake. If you can't, you can, of course, watch or listen after the fact. We make audio and video available at twit.tv and everywhere podcasts live. If you like this kind of discussion, stay tuned. TNT's coming up next with the week's tech news, including information about the new Windows Phone announcement. We didn't get to that, but that's a big story. And then right after, triangulation, and our guest will be the great Doc Searles, the author of, now in its 11th year, Clue Train, the Clue Train Manifesto, and a new book called The Intention Economy.
I have learned so much from Doc.
I adore Doc.
Salute him for me. He's great.
He's the Buddha of technology. He's one of the nicest guys out there. Just really fantastic.
And he loves radio. He's
a radio guy.
He is a radio geek to beat all radio geeks. Yeah.
And I'm with him on that. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next time on This Week in Google. Come by next week, won't you?